Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. It's good to be back with you. And this week, our guest will be Jacob Elul. He's a young man from Brooklyn who does real estate management for a living, but pursues his love of winemaking through his small Elul winery. Good evening, Jacob.
Good evening, Chaim.
So how does one combine real estate and winemaking? How does a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn get into either profession and follow from one and the other at the same time?
It's a very interesting story, but it's basically something that I got from my father. My father is, a very good and very successful in real estate. And since I was about 13 years old, he passed on his passion of winemaking to me.
So was he making wines, for the family only, or was he doing it for a wider audience?
My father is a very generous person, and he's always been, very charitable and very giving. And I believe he started learning how to make wine in Israel where he grew up in agriculture school in Mikveh Yisrael, which is one of the oldest schools, if not the oldest school
mm-hmm.
in Israel, which is located
right.
in Holon. And he taught me when I was 13 years old how to make wine in Brooklyn after he had already been quite successful in real estate. And he got all the equipment, and we used to help out. We used to wash all the barrels and wash all the containers. And slowly, slowly, I started to pick it up and started to gain an interest in it. And over time, I read books and I got really into it, and I spent a lot of time with him making wine, and he passed that on to me, and I continue it till today.
I met you this past Monday at the City Winery at the wine tasting, and I noticed you had some very interesting wines under your own label and under the Amos label. Care to
Correct.
Give us a little bit of a description?
Yes. So my father was approached by a good friend of his named Michel, who is a French Olé to Israel. And this guy, Michel, also happened to be the man who made the shidduch between my father and my mother. So without him, I wouldn't be alive. So my father,
right.
I guess, owes him, or if not my father, I owe him very much. But him and his partner, Avraham, approached my father and asked for investment because they wanted to make liquor. And my father said that he would invest with them on the condition that they also make wine in Eretz Yisrael. This is in Tekoa, which is about 10 minutes south of Jerusalem. They are from Jerusalem, but they wanted to produce the liquor in Tekoa. And upon my father's investment, they decided, okay, let's open up a winery. And they opened up a winery. They called it Amos after the Navi, the prophet Amos, who was
mm-hmm.
from the town of Tekoa in the Torah. And funny, in the book of Amos, it says in Pasuk, I believe Perek Tet, Pasuk Yudalid, that the Israelites will return to the land of Israel. They will produce, they will grow vineyards, and they will drink wine. So that Pasuk is actually on the back of every single bottle of Amos. And within a year, they were up and running and producing wine and selling in Israel. And a few years ago, It started to be imported to the United States, and I'm representing the brand in New York.
Care to give us a little description of the various wines, both under their label and yours?
Yeah, of course. So the Amos wines from 2011 was their Dumoulin blend, which is a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Shiraz, and their Cabernet Sauvignon. In 2012, they made an Au Chateau blend, which is Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and Malbec. They have another Dumoulin of 2012, which is Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. And they also made a Merlot, and they also made a Pinot Noir. And 2013, which is not yet imported into the United States, they have an Au Chateau blend, and they also have a Malbec, which is 100% Malbec, which is only sold in Israel. And if you notice, many of the names are French. The two winemakers, Michel and Avram, are from France. Avram is actually a convert who converted many, many years ago. And Michel is a distant relative of my father's, and both of them are from France. So hence the French names of their bottles.
Let me ask you first, what more or less is the retail price of their wines? What range?
Most of the wines range between, I believe, $16 to about $25.
Now, give us a description of one of the wines. If I were to drink, for example, their 2011 blend, what would it be like on the nose? What would it be like on the palate?
Okay, so the 2011 blend, the Dumoulin 2011, has a very rich, dark cherry flavor, like dried cherries, and a little bit of a chocolate flavor. It has a very distinct old world flavor. Most wines in Israel tend to be, you know, leaning towards the more new world style of winemaking,
mm-hmm.
which is like
correct.
Bolder, richer, fruitier flavors, whereas the wines that Michel and Avraham make under the label Amos tend to be more old world style, more French in style.
Okay. Let's talk now a little bit about your own wines.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, should I just start talking about my wine?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I started making wine around the age of 13 with my father in Brooklyn. Like I said before, my family does real estate, and we own a couple of properties in Brooklyn. And in the basement of one of our buildings in Brooklyn, we basically converted it into a winemaking, you know, a winery facility and a cellar. And for years, for the last 13 years, we've just been making all sorts of wines, from Alicante, Cabernets, Merlots, Malbecs, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, so many different varietals. We get most of our grapes from Connecticut or from New Jersey, where we have guys who import from all over. One company, the one in Connecticut, is called M&M Grape, and the one in New Jersey is called Gino Pinto. And both of these guys import from all over the world, and they also bring from California. And we usually go over there. We pick up the grapes. We bring it to Brooklyn. And that's where the winemaking process begins. And we have all the equipment. We have the crusher. We have the press. We have the stainless steel containers. We have the barrels. We have the bottles. We have the corking machine. We have the corks. We have everything you need to make the wine. And what I most recently made was my 2016 Syrah and Malbec, which originate from Curicó Valley, Chile, in South America. And the nice thing about dealing with these companies from Connecticut and New Jersey is that during the fall, they bring the grapes from California, which is, during the fall is California's harvest time. And during the spring, they bring the grapes from the southern hemisphere, from places like Australia, Argentina, and Chile, which is their harvest time. So unlike most wineries, which are bound to only one season of producing wine, I actually get to produce wine twice a year, which is a huge
advantage.
How many bottles
do you make a year on the average?
I would say about 1,500. About 1,500 bottles a year.
How much time do you spend once you get back from work? How much time do you spend on the average making wine?
So the funny thing is,
and I understand it, and it changes with the season. I understand.
Of course it changes with the season. But the nice thing is, for me at least, is that right underneath my office is my winery and my wine cellar. So I don't have to go too far to watch over the wine. So I work basically from about 8:30 in the morning till about 6:30 in the evening. And then I go down there and I check almost on a daily basis for about half an hour to an hour, just to check on the aging process. But once I get the grapes, which is usually around October for the California grapes and around May for the Chilean grapes, I usually from the southern hemisphere, I usually get from Chile. During those two months, I spend about maybe 3 weeks where I'm in the winery for hours on end, because that's, the time period of the harvest where, you're bringing
right.
the grapes, you're delivering the grapes, and you really have to track the stages of the fermentation. And for red grapes, for white grapes, fermentation can last from like 8 to 12 days, but for red grapes, it's usually about 12 to 18 days. And every day, I have to track it, and I have to take record, and I have to measure acid levels, and I have to measure sugar levels, I have to measure alcohol levels in order to track the progress to know when I can move on to the next stage of the wine production.
And how long does your wine get aged?
It's very much based on taste. Like, there are times where I'm, just in the middle, like today, for example, I went down to the winery, and I have a Cabernet Sauvignon from Lodi, California, sitting in a French oak barrel of 225 liters. And I put inside this a tube. It's called a wine sieve. That's just what it's
mm-hmm.
called. And you stick it inside the barrel and you put it inside the glass, and I just taste it. And I can taste that it's not ready. It's only been aging for about 4 months. But it's a gradual process of tasting and learning to understand the character of the wine. And when I understand the character of the wine, I know when it's time to bottle. I've made mistakes in the past. There have been times where I've bottled too soon. And had I just waited a little bit longer, I would have resulted with a more refined flavor. But, you learn a lot from experience.
Of course. Now, describe to us, again, the palate and the... And on the nose of some of your wines, What okay. are we in for when we, what can we expect?
So the wines that I make, that I made most recently in the Elul Cellars, which is in Brooklyn, the wines are not for sale, by the way. It's all just a hobby, and anybody who wants to come by is more than welcome. I'm happy to give tours and explain about the process. But the wines that I most recently made were, that I most recently bottled were this Chilean Syrah, which is bright and fruity and has a little bit of tart, a little bit of chocolate, and a little bit of a smokiness that you get from the oak. And I also made this Malbec, which also has a depth and a richness and a fruitiness that is just very, very pleasant. And I me and my friends, we sit around and we try both of these wines and we compare the two. I personally like the Syrah a little bit more than the Malbec, but I have friends who like the Malbec a lot more. Also, not too long ago, I bottled a Sauvignon Blanc, which is a white wine, and it turned out to be very, very delicious and complex, and it's full of different layers of flavor, part of which is due to the yeast. When a wine goes through fermentation, the yeast is converting the sugar into alcohol, and it's releasing carbon dioxide. And once the fermentation is done, all of those yeast cells die off, and you're left with a layer on the bottom of the container of dead yeast cells, which is called lees. And the lees actually can create their own complexity and their own flavors to the wine itself. Now, most white wine is filtered and the lees is separated from the wine, mm-hmm. so you don't actually see it in the bottle, but the flavor of the lees can still affect the wine. So basically, in the white wine that I made, you get a lot of flavors of like dried apricots and peach and guava. Apple is very noticeable on the nose. What else? Dried peach, apricot, guava. These bright, like fruity flavors. And then, you know, right. when you taste it at the beginning and smell it in the beginning, it tastes completely different at the end and once you're swallowing it, and it's almost like it's taking you on a journey. It's very, very interesting. That's one of the things I love about wine.
Your description is making my mouth water. Now I have no choice but to come and for a winery.
Come by. I'm happy to give you a bottle. I'm happy to. Anytime.
And are your wines kosher le Pesach?
It's funny you say that. The entrance, so when we started to make wine, me and my father, he put a big sign on the front door that says, no chametz allowed in this room, no food whatsoever allowed past this point. So, yeah, I can say with pretty strict confidence that the wine is kosher for Pesach. I mean, I can't say the hashgacha, it's all hobby wine, but I can say with confidence it's kosher for Pesach.
When I was telling you this morning that my father, Olav Shalom, used to make his own wine, one of the reasons I was not allowed in the cellar till age 15 is because precisely that. He kept it Pesachdik all year round.
Yeah.
So it was one of the reasons I was not allowed to wear shoes. I had to wear slippers that were waiting for me at the basement.
Ah, very cool. Very interesting.
So I shouldn't drag in Chas V'Cholile with my shoes. I shouldn't drag in any chometz from the upstairs.
Wow. Wow. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Tell me about your experience with your father and him making wine.
Well, his wine was extra sweet. That's what I grew up with. And there was, back in Uruguay in those days, there was no such thing as kosher dry wine. In fact, for years among us Ashkenazim, wine had to be extra sweet or it wasn't wine. I remember the first time I gave my father some dry wine when he came to visit us. He had already moved to Eretz Israel from South America. And he came to visit us once in the States for Pesach. I gave him some dry wine, and he says, "A Jew drinks this type of wine?" Flabbergasted that I gave it to him. He spit it out. "How can a Jew drink this?" His wine was extra, extra sweet, 21%. You can imagine
wow.
how great it must have been for health, right?
Yeah. If I may interject.
Today, if I were to drink that wine, I would get sick on the spot.
Yeah, I do quite a lot of wine tastings. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a wine tasting on East Shore Road at a place called Vintage Cask and Barrel in Manhasset, New York, in Long Island. And I do tastings very often, and a lot of the times people come and they taste the wine, and I notice that some people expect the wine to be a little bit sweet, and that makes me a little bit frustrated sometimes, because you know it keeps the stigma of kosher wine being a certain way. It keeps that stigma going, but kosher wine has evolved so much and
has evolved tremendously.
Tremendously. You know, I could say without a doubt that some of the wineries, some of the wines that are coming out of Israel are top notch.
International award winning wines. Great wines
yes.
that just happen to be kosher. Right.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
You know the old joke that the non-Jews had about kosher wine.
What's
about 34
joke?
Years ago, the joke was, you want kosher wine? No problem. Walk into any wine store, bottle you want, throw out half the bottle, fill it up with sugar, mix it well. Kosher wine.
I'll tell you what, one of the best wines right now that you'll see on the shelf is the Yaron 2013 by Galil Mountain, or I guess it's
mm-hmm.
also technically
right.
considered Golan Heights Winery. But
right.
that wine got awarded in the top 100 of, I believe it's Wine Spectator's or Wine Advocate's top 100 list. And
mm-hmm.
that wine made the
right.
list. So I, as soon as I saw that, I had to go get it, and I tried it, and it was incredible. One of my favorite wineries in Israel is Tzora Vineyard. Incredible wine.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend. And it's not too expensive either. For $25, you're getting an incredible world-class wine.
Absolutely. In fact, Daniel Rogov, when he was still, Oliver Solomon was still alive, and he used to have his yearly book, he would quite often,
mm-hmm.
Although he somehow managed to taste every single Israeli wine ever made, he would quite often compare it with European wines, and
mm-hmm.
they fared quite well against the old masters in Europe.
Yeah, I don't know why Israel hasn't gotten the spotlight yet, but I believe it's long overdue. And
but there is no question that Israel is an up and coming wine producer.
It should have been up and coming, you know, 10 years ago already. I think that
that's
maybe the judges may be a little bit biased, or I don't know. You know,
absolutely,
I'm not one to make claims, but I believe that there is a protection for the old regime, you know, the French and the Italian.
I absolutely believe it.
And
yes.
Perhaps
yes.
They're not giving the new guy it's 15 minutes of fame at the very least.
Right. Now, I am sure that throughout the years that you've been in wine production, there must have been some interesting or a funny incident. Maybe you can tell us a story or two.
Yeah, all the time. So, okay, so, you know, as we all know, that winemaking is very, has its own halachas, has its own, you know, rules of kashrut, you know. So one time, usually when the truck comes from New Jersey or from Connecticut with the grapes that we ordered to the winery in Brooklyn, we have the Spanish guys, you know, coming and, you know, the guys who help out. We have them carrying the grapes from the truck to us, but we created we had to put a bunch of tables, you know, to create a border so that they don't come into the winery. And they used to just, you know, they would come and they would bring us the crates and we would put it through the crusher and, you know, we would be in the winery. And it was just funny because they would always like say, "What's going on over there? What's going on over there? What are you guys doing over there with all these grapes?" Because they could never see into the winery. And I always thought that that was very, very funny because they were doing so much of the heavy lifting, but they never really got to see much of the results. So I always thought that was pretty funny, but they were always very cool about it, and they were always very helpful, and, you know, we paid them, so they didn't complain too much.
Right. Yes, making kosher wine, when you're talking to a non-Jew who doesn't understand the laws, who doesn't understand the halachas, then it almost sounds like voodoo.
Yes, right. It's always
right.
a very awkward conversation to have.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, how does winemaking changed your life? Let me rephrase that and make it easier to for you to understand what I'm driving at. Whatever our work is, it always manages to teach us something about life. Has winemaking taught you anything? Has winemaking changed you in any way?
Oh, 100%, 100%. You know, one of the contingencies of making wine is the importance of, you know, being Shomer Shabbat. And when I was a kid, when I was younger and I was helping my father, and I would be tempted maybe to do something. I didn't grow up in the most orthodox environment. I was orthodox, but I wasn't, you know, Hasidic or anything like that. So I had temptation. But whenever I thought about how if I did X or Y or Z, if I did that, I would feel guilty because then I wouldn't really be able to, it would affect, you know, the kashrut of the wine and my ability to make wine at all. It helped keep me in check, and it helped me be a more observant and mindful Jew. And it helped me a lot in my practice of Yadut day in, day out, and especially on Shabbat. So I would say that in that sense, winemaking has affected my Judaism very, very much. But in addition to that, it's also, you know, expanded my interest in food. It's expanded my interest in so many things because wine is a very, you know, worldly, it's a worldly experience, and it's opened my mind to books and wanting to travel and checking out different regions of the world. Last year I was in Napa Valley and Sonoma Valley for a wine convention, and I learned so much about the different equipment that's used in the vineyard and the equipment that's used in the wineries. It's amazing. It's incredible. The depth that there is in the industry also.
And we're almost out of time, but I think I'm going to have no choice but to come and visit your winery. So expect
anytime.
A call any day.
Yeah, it would
okay.
be my pleasure. Yes.
And thank you very, very much for being on our program.
It was a pleasure.
It was very interesting. And the fact how you explained how wine changed you as a Jew and as a person, that was very inspiring.
Thank you
very, very much for being on the program. And good night, one and all.
Good night. You're welcome. Thank you.
Turn us on again tomorrow when we will be talking about wine once again. Thank you very much. And have a good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, one and all.
Now, what do we do for...